She stands on my eyelids, and her hair is in my hair. She has the color of my eye. She has the body of my hand. In my shade she is engulfed as a stone against the sky. She will never close her eyes, and she does not let me sleep. And her dreams in the bright day make the suns evaporate and make me laugh, cry, and laugh. Laugh, cry, and laugh. Laugh, cry, and laugh. Laugh, cry, and laugh. And speak when I have nothing to say.
Thank you.
You are listening to K-Chung Radio, and this is Touch Touch K-Chung. April 22nd, 2012.
My dear friends, it's not my custom to speak to you except at the Thursday evening concerts, but this week we are dealing with such unusual kinds of music that I felt a few words might help to bring you closer to an understanding of it. First of all, I want to tell you that we've arranged to play you an extra piece at the end of this program, a sort of bonus for braving the perils of this strange and experimental music you're about to hear. This will be La Valse by Ravel. One reason for this addition is the brevity of the printed program as it stands. Another reason is that the program seems to cry out for one good old-fashioned solid sound of orchestral glamour. On the other hand, if you should suspect that we're merely offering you a sop, or even trying to send you home in a more genial and contented humor, you're absolutely right. This is our second week of examining problems in 20th century music. Last week, we heard two works intended to provoke us into thinking about style, that almost desperate search for style that's been going on in our century. But we never really came to grips with the definition of style. What is it, after all? Well, it's a long discussion, not suitable for this occasion. Style is many things. But one aspect of style we can define is that aspect which distinguishes any one kind of music from any other kind. It's almost like a personal signature of a composer. But in the search for originality, which goes on among our contemporary composers, style has in some instances become almost synonymous with technique in the sense of actual compositorial procedure. For example, in the Brandt work we shall hear now, thank you.
just like an attitude. See, music is nothing but styles, like I do. I play a style. If it's the blues, I play the blues. If it's a ballad, I play the ballad. If it's funky, I play that. If it's fast, I play that. Not one style. You know, like people say he's sold out and shit like that. I don't know what they're talking about, and I don't care to try to think like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Sold out. Oh, I missed that one.
No, that's some bullshit.
They did,
no,
yeah.
That's what musicians say when they're lazy and don't want to learn different things about music. You know, like the white man just says, you cool, and you just pick up an instrument, and you could play with a lot of feeling, stay there. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You don't study, you know, whatever they learn when they started out, that's all they know. People like that say that. Jazz is just like an attitude. It has a center to it, but it sounds... cuts the sound so you can like shape the sound with your mouth. Mm-hmm. And if you've been doing it as long as I've been doing it, it's just automatic. It's just one.
Okay.
Ain't nothing but a move. When they say jazz, they mean a concept that a person has that's not straight as legit white composers. Old composer, Russian or whatever, have. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Here, it means that you're a nigger and you're playing an instrument that you didn't study. That's what I get from it. So I ignore the critics. You know, I'm just a musician and I love music, you know? And if I'm around musician and stuff, you know, that work for me, I get the best out of them. I was in grade school in the sixth grade, and before we went to school, there was a program on the radio called Harlem Rhythm. And I listened to it for 15 minutes, that's all it. So I said I wanted to sound like that. I wanted to play music like that. But it was a black music. I could tell a white band from a black band. I don't know why, how I could tell it, but I could just tell. Because it wouldn't go in my body. So when I hear these trumpet players, I say, I want to play like that. And I was working when I was 15. Eddie Randall was a trumpet player. He led the band. My girlfriend dared me to call him up, so I called him up. And I said, you need a trumpet player? He gave me a job. In that band, all the trumpets were good. So every time I'd make a mistake, even if it was breeding, somebody would say, Little Davis, don't do that. You know, don't play with a pocket up here. Don't play like that. Because these vessels will break. So I was playing what they call non-pressure. You couldn't tell if I was playing or not. You know. Anyway, St. Louis was like a conservatory. Because when I got to New York, I thought everybody knew as much as I did and more. But it was only a few guys. It was Dizzy, Monk, Coleman Hawkins, Bud Powell, Eddie Davis, and me. I played, you know, like Clark Terry and Dizzy. Those were my idols. I was waiting on Bird to go uptown, and Bird asked Sammy, the owner of the Deuces, could he bring a band in? Sammy said, you don't have a trumpet player. He said, here's one. He didn't even look at me, right? This is one. Maybe because I knew everything that Dizzy played, some of it. And everything, some things I knew he played, I couldn't play. I said, who? You. So, if I said no, he wouldn't have a job. He played so fast, I used to want to quit every night. Because he would leave the stand and leave me up there. I said, shit. So I finally learned how to play that fast. In order to become a musician, you have to learn a bunch of cliches. If you pick up an instrument and you learn it, these cliches, these little melodies you've heard, will come out in that instrument. You can tell when people say, well, I'm gonna play like Charlie Parker used to play. You can tell it's a copy. You know, when I listen to trumpet players, I can tell that they copied Clifford Brown or Dizzy or myself or Fats Navarro. It's not original. And when they play, it's sometimes you have to play a long time to be able to play like yourself.
This is Touch. Touch. K. Chung. April 22nd.
Now here's Mr. Sterling Hayden, who has been known to scoff at some of his work in pictures, but his list of performances could rank on just about anybody's list of good ones. In The Asphalt Jungle, Dr. Strangelove, The Last Goodbye. At the age of 60, he's now published his very first novel, even though he wrote an autobiography about 10, 12 years ago. The novel's called Voyage, a story about the sea, a story about America on the threshold of the 20th century. Mr. Hayden is a man of the sea himself. He used to be a maritime man. In addition to being an actor, a writer, an adventurer, and a great proponent of cannabis, of marijuana, which I want to talk about later when we get to where this man's going to come on to explain the normal laws, or the laws with his organization. Say, now listen, I read somewhere where they had set up a big publicity tour for you for this book, Voyages, and you said, no, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, well, Tom, you know, in a way, it goes back to what you touched on a moment ago about one's attitude towards one prior career, one might say.
Yep.
Now, it's sort of a coincident career. I mean, acting thing.
Are you all through acting?
No. I work when I get broke, or I work when something comes along that is really has some integrity and guts for me.
Got anything working now?
Not at the moment.
Okay.
I'm not working today, but a lot of things are cooking. Mm-hmm. And the feeling I had about the whole thing of the public appearance tour, about the novel Voyage, was that, yeah, I agreed to go out because it makes sense, and I enjoy the shows so much myself,
mm-hmm.
that I thought to be a part of them. And then I thought, no, I'd sort of like to see the book go by its own, because I get the added thing, not just of being a writer, but the hype of the ex actor. So I thought, well, let her go and see what she does, you know. So I pulled out of it temporarily, and then I decided, well, might be time to go back now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what piqued my interest in you when I read about the fact that they had you set up for it, and then you didn't want to do it, because I have the feeling most authors will do almost anything they can to hype, to plug, to promote, to get that book off the ground.
Yeah, well, I'm here now.
I noticed that, but I kind of thought probably that...
I wanted to see what the book could do by itself. You see, I wanted to see it. And then I thought, if providentially it might battle its way up into the middle of the New York Times bestseller list or something like that, which it has done, but I think it was there, and now it's beginning to recede. So maybe what little of the war horse there is in me thought, well, okay, maybe go out and see what you can do and see if that changes anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually, when you bust your neck long enough on this kind of an endeavor, why, you'd like to share it, you know, you'd like to share it.
I thought that probably the reason that you had agreed to come on here was because you're such a great admirer of this show.
You know why I'm here?
No, I don't.
All right, I'm here because it's a this is no nonsense. I've done a couple of other shows in the last week, but I'll tell you the absolute truth. When the subject of going out came up first, I said, "Well, I would like to get on a show where it's possible." Not just to skim the surface of a lot of subjects, but do what, of course, you're noted for, what your show is noted for, which is talk.
Mm-hmm.
Talk.
Yeah, get into it.
And unless you get down into it, why, in a way, you figure, what's the use?
If you go on for 6 minutes...
And this, of course, is your forte, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's say a lot of people think so.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
D'accord.
And don't tell them if you find out that it's not.
Thank you.
You are listening to K-Chung Radio.
Thank you. caught in two. It's true. It's not hard to realize. Just look into false colored eyes. She'll build you up to just put you down. What a clown.
She walks the way ินสนมตรมยาแต่เป็นดอกภูผาปริศนาหนาดูยามเมื่อเช้าตรู่หมู่แมงแสวงภายโอ้ดอกบัวทองเป็นเจ้าของของภาย
Je me souviens. Elle se tient au bord des fleuves. Elle vient de Birmanie. Qu'elle marche. Un jour, devant elle le Gange, oui, elle reste. C'est ça. Douze enfants morts tandis qu'elle marche vers le Bengale.
Oui, elle les laisse, les vend, les oublie.Vers le Bengale devient stérile.
Savanakhet, Laos,
oui, 17 ans. Elle est enceinte. Elle a 17 ans. Elle est chassée par sa mère. Elle part.Elle demande une indication pour se perdre. Personne ne sait.
Tha khoi nè ai, tha nè, khoi ngơn nè ai. Chị mình thuộc cho mình nhạc đi, phà ơi. Hãy cứ bùa ba ni hâu nè nó.
À Calcutta, elles étaient ensemble.
La blanche et l'autre?
Oui. C'était pendant les mêmes années. Oui. Pour elle, il avait tout quitté. En une nuit.
La nuit du bal?
Oui. Michael Richardson était fiancé à une jeune fille de Estella, Lola Valérie Stein.
Le mariage devait avoir lieu à l'automne. Puis il y a eu ce bal de Estella.
Elle était arrivée tard à ce bal, au milieu de la nuit, habillée de noir. Que d'amour ce bal, que de désir.
Cette lumière,
la mousson,
cette poussière,
Calcutta centrale.
Il y a comme une odeur de fleurs,
la lèpre.
Où est-on ?
L'ambassade de France aux Indes.
Cette rumeur,
le Gange. Après sa mort, il est parti des Indes.
Oui.
Sa tombe est au cimetière anglais.
Oui. Morte là-bas,
aux îles. Trouvée morte, une nuit.
Une Lancia noire file sur la route de Chandernagore. C'est là, une première fois que...
Oui. De quoi avez-vous peur ?
Anne-Marie Stretter.
Le soir, il dansait, il danse. Sur quoi pleurez-vous ? Je vous aime jusqu'à ne plus voir, ne plus entendre, mourir.